The Overmount men arrive up the farm road where Whiteside's Road is today on a Friday the 13th, and indeed, this spot will become unlucky for some of the prisoners. All around you, these frontiersmen, without the luxuries of the regular armies, set up a militia camp and forage for much-needed food. Draper relates this quote to the day before at John Walker's plantation, but the scene would have been repeated here. Nearly dry ears of corn and green pumpkins were to be had from the Loyalist fields. One American patriot later shared that those fried green pumpkins tasted as good as anything he had ever eaten. Because there were not enough cooking utensils, the prisoners were given theirs raw. The colonels likely take over the Bickerstaff home, which was probably where the later era house is today. The men camp in farm fields or the woods without tents. A prisoner, Loyalist surgeon Dr. Uzzle Johnson, records in his diary, "In the evening, their liberality extended so far as to send 5 shirts to 9 of us as a change of linen, other clothing in like proportion." For years, only the chimneys of the first house remained here, so the site became known as Red Chimneys. We don't like to see the dark sides of our heroes, but the patriots or Whigs were human. Their commander, Colonel William Campbell, issues an order you probably hear being read to the men on Saturday. In it, Campbell deplores deserters from the force and adds, "It is with anxiety that I hear the complaints of the inhabitants on account of the plundering parties who issue out of the camp and indiscriminately rob both Whig and Tory, leaving our friends, I believe, in a worse situation than the enemy would have done." He orders officers to suppress those actions and disallows the release of soldiers from service until the prisoners are dropped off at Bethabara, now in Winston-Salem. The army passed through Gilberttown on the way to the prior night's campsite. There, Colonel Isaac Shelby learned from a freed patriot officer that 9 Whigs had been hung at 96 South Carolina. Officers called for some of the Tories to be tried for their perceived crimes. In a copy of the state laws at the county courthouse there, Shelby saw they just needed 2 magistrates to convene a trial, of which there are plenty among the officers. Here Shelby selects 5 county magistrates among the force, including controversial militia leader Colonel Benjamin Cleveland. 12 patriot officers make up the jury, hardly an impartial one. Around 10 a.m. on Saturday, the trial starts. They were somewhere in the open here, within a ring of men, if not a corral. Among the defendants and charges are Ambrose Mills for inciting British allied Cherokees to attack European American settlements. This was despite the fact Mills had fought alongside many of these patriots in the 1776 Cherokee campaign and lost his first family to natives in the French and Indian War. Draper calls Mills a man of fair reputation and the charge very likely without foundation. Another defendant is Walter Gilkey for wounding a boy for refusing to reveal the whereabouts of his patriot father. The boy, now old enough to be serving in the Patriot Army, testifies against him. Gilkey says that he shot the boy in the arm in self-defense because he held a pistol. John McFall was tried for whipping the 10-year-old son of a Patriot militiaman with a peach limb because the youngster refused to get feed for his unit's horses. McFall fought against the Cherokees with Patriots earlier in the war, but became a Tory leader. McFall is defended by an officer from his county and almost freed, until Cleveland looks up from some papers and says, "That man, McFall, went to the house of Martin Davenport, one of my best soldiers, when he was away from home, fighting for his country, insulted his wife and whipped his child, and no such man ought to be allowed to live." Gilkey's elderly father is among the prisoners. He offers his horse, tack, and $100 in ransom for his son's life to no avail. In a matter of hours, 36 to 39 men are tried. Of those, 30 to 32, possibly more, are found guilty of capital crimes and sentenced to immediate death, including the 3 men mentioned earlier. Ironically, 2 who had most clearly betrayed the Overmountain men are set free. The day after crossing the mountains that today mark the Tennessee border, part of North Carolina then, James Crawford and Samuel Chambers had disappeared. As feared by the Patriots at the time, they found Ferguson and warned him of the approaching force. His neighbor Colonel John Sevier nonetheless intercedes for Crawford, unwilling to see him die, and young Chambers is excused because the officers believe Crawford led him astray. This was Crawford's 2nd trial, conviction, and escape from a noose in a week. Ferguson had tried him on Kings Mountain because the Overmountain men had not shown up yet, so he thought Crawford had lied. Crawford was sentenced to hang the night of October 7th, only to be rescued by the battle occurring that day. The fact many people were conflicted about which side to join during the Revolution is illustrated by the story of Simon, last name unknown. He had fought with the Patriots at the Battle of Ramsar's Mill, only to be convinced by Tory neighbors to join the British afterward. He begs a Patriot neighbor among the Lincoln County troops to help him in exchange for rejoining the Patriots. He is freed and, in fact, fights with them the rest of the war. Scroll down to A Tree Bears Tragic Fruit, use its walking instructions, and then click its audio clip.